Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
What to watch
on Point of View.
All right, so he is not here. And I did say he is not going to be here. And he said to me, no, I'll be here, I'll be here. I said, I bet you are not going to be here. Of course he's not here. Leroy Mark is sitting somewhere facing the beach with his feet up, wearing some shorts, and I will say no more. Hello, Leroy.
Good evening. It is so accurate. I am indeed wearing shorts with my feet up looking at the beach.
He fell right into that trap. Did you see? He loved telling us he's sitting up and watching
them. I'm so sorry.
He loved it.
It was a terrible thing.
He milked it for what it's worth. Leroy, it's wonderful to have you, even though you're not here in person. Loved your selection, by the way.
Did you?
I actually did. I really, really loved your selection this week. I want to start with where do I start? Where do you want to start?
I want to start with Unfollowed and get it out of the way. Believe that we had...
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, there was that.
We have a lovely selection. I think I must go away more often.
Unfollowed, season two. Can I keep quiet? I'm going to try not to say anything until... I'm going to try not to say anything.
So, well, what was your view of season one?
Season one, I liked Thembikile. You know, I think Thembikile is a fantastic host. I liked him. I think he had a nice balance of entertainment, you know, journalism. He's got a nice balance. So he actually was my star for season one. Yeah, that was that was for me the thing. He was the hook.
Thembikile Mkgwathotho is a newsman, and he was interviewed on a podcast with Susan Bofor Walsh recently, where he spoke about why he did the project of Unfollowed in season one. He loved that he was able to bring some gravitas to what would be commonly seen as pop culture icons, right? These celebrities, Bomi Hlali, Boyo Lady Zuma. And the whole idea of Unfollowed is speaking to controversial personalities that have either been unfollowed or part of the cancel culture of social media. Season two comes back now and Showmax is currently streaming, and we have Uspeech, who is the new host for season two. Now, I've been studying the first episode of this new season, where they have Melanie Viljoen, and you'll remember her from Geeknet's Real Housewives of Pretoria. There was a whole debacle around the Tammy Taylor Nails franchise, and she and her husband, Beat, were part of this confusion on who owns what with who, whose identity was stolen, etc. Just like you, I find that if you're going to have a trivial pop culture media personality interviewing show about their lives, and you don't want it to seem sort of, you know, conceited and just a vanity project, you have to have a very strong host. And I'm not sure in this season if Speech has the same gravity.
I didn't say it.
I will say it.
I did not say it. I said I was going to keep quiet.
I will say it. I will say it because
Can you hear me? Like clicking my... I'm clicking. Snapping. Tell them, Leroy.
I cannot be cancelled. I cannot be cancelled for speaking the truth. Because another issue is that you can't yourself be a pop culture icon and want to interview other pop culture icons. You can't be someone who wants to be famous, then interviewing people who are famous. And unfortunately for me, I feel that that's where the error came in. But yeah, he is a very good host.
It was a bad choice.
I think it was a bad choice.
I think the host really was a bad choice. I don't know. It didn't work. I think they should have stuck with Thembikile. I'm not sure, you know, I don't have the reasons behind why Thembikile is not back. But it's lost something.
Well, for me, the list of people who will be interviewed in this season is piquing my interest, if not at least tickling it, right? Because I don't know why I would ever want to hear from someone like Pitch Black Afro in 2024. I think his star has sort of, you know, risen and set many, many moons ago. So I don't know why we bring him out of the doldrums of like celebrity. Brenda Fassie's son, Bongani Fassie, will be in the hot seat at some point as well. And he's been in the news recently for sort of his behavior. Pastor Mboro, I can see why it would be important. But I'm thinking another huge issue around shows like this is finding people who actually have, you know, enough material for us to even care to watch. And I think that season two might just be too much of an extension of, you know, now going into the fringes and finding people who we think are interesting for interest's sake. So that is Unfollowed. It is every Thursday on Showmax, new episodes. And you can look forward to hearing all about Melanie Viljoen and her beloved husband, Piet.
Maybe it's too soon, you know. Maybe you and I will change our minds about the host. Maybe after the third episode... You know, he would have sunk in and we would have been okay.
Maybe. And
if we're wrong,
maybe
if we're wrong, we'll come back and say it.
Yeah, no, I'll apologize. But right now, you know, it remains to be seen.
Okay. Let's also just quickly go to the Festival of Lights. I love the Festival of Lights. I love it.
So today it opens at the Joburg Zoo. For me, the Festival of Lights is like a mainstay icon of the Johannesburg landscape, right? It's one of those things that brings young and old. And I always think I'm too old for it. And then I take my niece and I realize why I actually go. It's such a spectacular thing. All ages and the wonder and the awe. And for me, it's become sort of a forecursor, right? To say this is now when Christmas begins, you know. This is the day you bring out your Christmas tree. When the Festival of Lights starts, it's when we're truly in that festive season. So I'm looking forward to it. It is at the Johannesburg Zoo. And it starts today, the 28th of November. We're having the opening and you can go from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday to Sundays and you can walk through the zoo with a wonderful route decorated with lights. It's absolutely beautiful and children under 3 go in for free and tickets are available from 75 rand for kids and 100 rand for pensioners and 175 for us
guys, please,
grown folk.
Yeah, no, really, please, if you can, you know, take advantage of this. I love the fact that they also make special moments for families with disabled children. There are special spaces, they are safe. You know, if you've been unable to take your children out, especially a child with autism, they are brilliant at that. They give you as a family great space, open space. No one has to be, you know, being shy about their child making noise or whatever. It's great, guys. Please do take them out there. It's 75 rand, as you said, for children and 100 rand for adults.
Yeah, it's a wonderful space to be. And it's one of the few times where you can just go and all be children with the wonder of life. So yes, I absolutely agree.
Into the serious stuff.
Oh, that's serious stuff. Okay, I want to start with Joy, because Joy for me is an interesting story that's running on Netflix right now. It has been on the streaming network for about a week now. And it tells the story of, if we're to put it crudely, as they did in the 1970s, this idea of test tube babies, what we now know as what we now know as in vitro fertilization, IVF.
Yeah.
And so it tells the story of these three characters who are integral in beginning the process, really, of researching and starting the first in vitro fertilization trials. And it's absolutely groundbreaking because you start seeing a lot of the issues we're having right now with things like AI, where we're trying to regulate spaces where, you know, the question is whether we as man are trying to play God. You know, at the time it was as advanced technology as cloning, which is bewildering to think about. And it tells a story then of Jean Purdy, who is this young nurse, and she's an embryologist, who she and this scientist, Mr. Edwards, come together to create the science, really, around IVF. It is so interesting to watch because you also start to see the harrowing stories of families who are unable to have children in inverted commas the natural way. And this for them is, you know, a shining light where there's a hope for them to be able to be parents and moms for the first time.
I mean, it's for me also just such a, it's so wonderful to see how, you know, how far we've come with this kind of technology, how we see it, you know, and how in our minds, it's no longer a thing in that way.
And
it wasn't so long ago when it really divided nations.
I'll tell you from the LGBTI community where in vitro fertilization and surrogacy has begun to open a world where we can have families. And you can just imagine what that means for people who you know, are in love and want to have a family and want to extend that love to children. And there was never an option for it. And here we are in 2024 where, you know, I routinely get asked if me and my partner are going to adopt, are going to use a surrogate in vitro. And that's the options we have, as if, you know, they're normal and part and parcel of just everyday living and continuing our lives. Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting. And at the time, there was massive religious uproar as mm-hmm. well, because again, who has the right to create life? And mm-hmm. is this seen as circumventing the right of God? Mm-hmm. I found it to be so interesting where you see that backdrop of, you know, the very orthodox religious sect and people who just want to be parents. Absolutely loved it.
Juxtapose mm-hmm. that to people, real people who you know, who have children who you know, who are conceived mm-hmm. this way. I mean, it's quite something.
Yes. And I mean, I've got two of my friends who are married and found that they were unable to conceive. And they've just went through, well, the one couple has gone through the second cycle of IVF. And the other couple has just given birth at the end of last year to a beautiful baby girl. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, there's no stigma attached to the child. Mm. It really is, you know, just part and parcel of the world. And I think it's so interesting to see how that moment in history, and again, just to look at what's happening in the world, you know, mm. when you are living in history and creating history, you will get backlash. Mm. And then, you know, 20 years yeah. later, no one will even remember it.
Yeah.
It'll be part and parcel of our lives.
Moana 2.
Oh, so I love this because of the time of year. And I think we really all are looking to de-stress. But Moana 2 is interesting for me because what they've done is, they've taken a Walt Disney animation and they've made a sequel. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, sequels don't do well in normal, you know, real world movies. Mm-hmm. And I think even worse in animations, because you really need a compelling storyline for it to make sense. Mm-hmm. Moana did something that most of the animated movies do, where the first movie has a full life cycle, right? We mm. build this world, give you all the building blocks, the history, where we are, and the characters. And then we just sort of develop them as we go along through the sequels. Unfortunately, with Moana 2, we get a brand new band of crazies mm. that go with her mm. As a way seeker. And we now find it to be quite a crowded movie because we're having to learn the new characters. But that being said, there's a wonderfully wholesome story about normalizing having different faces in animation that yes. aren't necessarily Barbie
yes.
and Frozen. Yes. And I do enjoy that yes. kids start seeing themselves yes. in different cultures.
Yeah, so I have mixed feelings about that. Absolutely. Mm. I think visually, I was really moved by the fact that broad nose, broad shoulders, different mm. looking young people. It was wonderful. It's really a delight. But mm. the accent just was jarring. I'm sorry. You know, so you know that these are either Maori people or mm. Aborigines or, you know, something. You know mm. that. And that's not mm. to say they do not speak English and they shouldn't speak English, because mm. the majority of Maori people are speaking English. But there uh-huh. is a texture to it. This mm. was so like straight out of New York that for yeah. me, it was like, okay, I mean, you do the one thing right and then get the other so wrong. I don't understand mm. it. And also the just little things, man, the just the little jokes and stuff, they were so out of place, so urban, so American. I just thought, they could have tried harder in just localizing it slightly for me.
One of the reviewers made a point that it speaks so much to what you're saying around, you can't want to place a storyline mm. outside of America mm. and still make it American.
Absolutely.
Because as you say, they sound like they literally stepped out of New Jersey or Queens or somewhere.
Yeah.
And more importantly, you know, Dwayne Johnson voices one of the characters there.
Starring.
You know, and that's my point, that you could have done so much to really lean in to your accent and lean in, because the actors who are playing these characters are Maori themselves.
Yeah,
so yeah. I agree with you. It was so a missed opportunity.
Mm. Even the slang. I mean, it's like, could they not have tried? a little bit.
Is the issue not that we have a movie that's animated, but it's not meant only for children? You know, I think that's the other issue, that we're trying to cater for everyone, where the movie's animated, but family members will be sitting there and watching along. You know, Malume Leroy will take the nephews and nieces to go and watch, and he has to be entertained as well. And I think that's where the issue is, that we're forgetting that Mapopai must be Mapopai at the end of the day.
Okay, the last one is my favorite. Go ahead.
Yes. Queer. So this stars my favorite actor, Daniel Craig. And it's a story that is from a book that was really set in the 1950s around this character who I found to be quite interesting and very jarring. I don't know where to put him. Mm-hmm. But he's a writer who is battling this terrible heroin addiction. And we're not sure he's queer or he's gay or what until we're about 45 a quarter of the way into the movie, where we start seeing him, you know, he's an expat, he's living in Mexico City, and he's really sort of this loner who's doing his thing and sort of going around until he meets this character of this young man who he meets at the bar. And he ran away from America because there was this drug raid that happened there. So he's, you know, establishing a life for himself. Yeah. And he finds this character that's absolutely enamored with. He doesn't know where and why, but he finds himself absolutely captivated with this young man. And there's a lot of chemistry there. And he's looking so deep into his soul to have a connection with this young man. He says the one line that absolutely resonated with me, where I want to talk to you without having to speak. Very romantic. And you watch them fall in love, and then it's cut into three acts. And this is the interesting part of this. It's cut into three acts. So you get this part where he leaves New Orleans and settles down in New Mexico. He finds love of his life. And then the third act is them sort of finding each other out. Time moves sort of between, you know, it cuts back and forth, because at some point we're left hanging to figure out what happened in this relationship. And I won't give away the complexity of the relationship, because it is quite a big part of the storyline. But it's an absolutely wonderfully romantic
It's beautiful,
take
man,
on relation.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful, Liman.
It's beautiful. It's beautifully shot. It's complex enough for you to get it, and it's not trivial. It's also, you know, what you were saying earlier about the fact that we're not sure until you're somewhere in the movie. It's exactly that. Mm. This is in the 1950s. If you contextualize that, you then make sense of why it's a little bit not obvious in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's in the 1950s.
For the first time, I also enjoyed that it was slow.
Yes.
Slow,
I loved that. In fact, I actually picked that up. I thought to myself, you're absolutely spot on, Leroy. I loved how slow it was. I just thought, and I kept thinking, brilliant. This director has intentionally slowed down this film in how they speak, in how intentional they are in their movement. And I was wondering whether, did he tell them to do that, or did he literally have to slow it down himself? I kept thinking myself, did he do that post-production, or did he ask them to slow down?
I would think he asked him to slow down. I'll tell you why, because it is based on a book. And the book itself is excruciating detail. The book itself has the same pace. Mm. You really get into the relationship, the four corners of the relationship. You're really playing in there. Mm. And you would know from any movie that has been made from a book, of a book adapted into a movie, that you feel like you've missed something. You feel like there's big chunks of it that were left on the shelf.
Always.
But for me, with this, not having read the full book, but really sort of immersing myself in the book, is finding that it was slowed down enough for you to be able to really encapsulate this relationship. Because a relationship is a very strong part of the storyline. And they get to find each other. And then so the whole idea is them going into this place in New Mexico to go find this plant that assists with some sort of telepathy. Mm. So there's a bit of fantastical, you know, sort of fantasy part of it, but the relationship is the most important part of it, and that's why I think they slowed it down in the acting. And let me tell you what Daniel Craig does, apart from me and him having a strong relationship. He also does this wonderful thing of really characterize the character so differently.
It's beautiful. He was brilliant. I would never have cast him. That's the thing. I would never have cast him. But he was so masterful. It was beautiful.
I started seeing his versatility when he did The Glass Onion.
Mm.
And then, and we discussed it early on in the year.
Mm.
And what I'm seeing about him now is that he really is truly a thespian.
Yeah.
And I almost think that him as James Bond was actually a disservice to him.
Yeah.
I think he's so much better suited on the side of the spectrum, isn't he?
This is, it's a masterpiece. Get rid of all your prejudice, Mudibedi. Just for a minute, if people can just forget that this is a gay story, you will be in heaven.
It is absolutely well shot. And I think we're getting to a point now where we're going back to yours and my favorite era, the era of storytelling and not just 90 minutes of bangs and smoke and special effects.
Lira Mark, enjoy the beach. Enjoy your weekend. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.